Welcome to the Ether. Today is Friday, April 21st, 2023. Today on the Ether, Ethan Buckman on AIB. That's all in bits, not butts. Different companies. The ICF and informal. Let's take a listen.
Hey everyone, this is my first time as a host of a Twitter space, so I apologize in advance if this is not very efficient at the beginning. But I think we have Ethan here. Can you hear me, Ethan?
What's up? Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Cool.
Is it your first Twitter space as well?
I think I've been on a couple.
Yeah, I think we want to do this on more.
I used to not use Twitter on my phone and forced me to get it back. So that's my excuse.
Yeah. I think I've done a couple now. It's pretty cool because you can get people to ask questions. I think that's like the thing that works better than a YouTube video.
Uh-huh.
And that's why what we want to do today. I think if we have people and they want to show up, I think we'll bring them on stage.
Cool. Good times.
It's actually your birthday today. I saw that on Slack. So, If anyone wants to wish Ethan a happy birthday, that's it's a good time now.
Oh yeah,
well I think 100%. Okay, so let's get started. I have a few questions lined up as people join in, and then we'll bring up whoever wants to talk. So I don't know how that works, but if you put your hands up, we'll try to bring you as a speaker. I think Andrea is managing the informal account, so he'll give you the ability to speak.
Cool.
Yeah, so I think I'd want to start, by like kind of setting the stage for everyone and having you talk a little bit about your role. We all know that you have two hats in Cosmos, actually three hats.
Mm-hmm.
You are the co-founder of Cosmos. You started working at AIB initially, moved to the ICF. You're still the president of the ICF. And now you're the CEO of Informal System. So let's start with Informal System. What do you do? What do you do, Ethan, at Informal System?
What do I do at Informal? Well, I'm the CEO of Informal. I set the vision and organize the work and the kind of structure of the company. I guess I'm the face of the company, so I talk publicly about it. And I'm involved in a lot of the products the company is building, so providing sort of guidance and direction to our product owners. The usual stuff a CEO does, raising money for the company and planning for its long-term strategy. The way I think about the role of a CEO is, we try to think about everything in terms of the promises people make. We use this workflow language to describe the promises we make to each other because, work is all about promise making and consensual expectations, which are basically promises. And so the CEO is the person in the organization who makes the promises with the longest time horizon and the broadest scope. So everyone in the company is making promises about different things they're responsible for over different time horizons and different scopes. And as the CEO, I make the promise with the broadest scopes and the longest time horizons. And I'm making those promises essentially to the whole organization. So Informal structured as a workers' cooperative. Which means every employee has one vote at the end of the day. So if they don't like me, then, they can get rid of me. And they know that, and I remind them that all the time. So essentially I'm accountable to them. And so, trying to steer the ship for the long term to realize the informal mission of transforming software money in organizations. Yeah.
So what kind of promises are we talking about here? Can you give me an example?
Well, yeah, I mean, these are long-term promises in terms of the organization of the company and what we're working on. I mean, essentially, I'm, you know, making promises about that the structure of the company will continue to respect the employees, that this is a place where we take care of people, that it's a place where we intend to have transformative impact on the world, and that the work we do day to day, you know, leads towards larger goals in terms of making things better, making the quality of, you know, software better, and the quality of money better, and the quality of organizations themselves better. So it's sort of about the kind of the promises are about the long-term outcomes and impact we want to have in the world, and what the quality of life will be like for the employees of the company over the sort of long term.
Right. Okay, so let's explain a little bit what the company does. We did that in the video we put up on the YouTube channel last week. Mm-hmm. But let's quickly summarize it. If you can go over the different verticals that we have at Informal, and you can spend a little bit more time speaking about the verticals that involve the ICF, since we're going to talk about that in a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. So how did we map out the verticals? I guess we talked about the Apalachee, which is our formal verification engine, Tendermint, or now Comet BFT, IBC, the Cosmos Hub, Collaborative Finance, Security Audits, Validator. I think those are pretty much all the things that we do or work on. The first few are, you know, have traditionally been covered at least somewhat by the ICF. I mean, when Informal spun out of the ICF in 2020, we were initially just focused on sort of formal methods and developing Tendermint and IBC in Rust. But over time, as, you know, gaps emerged basically in core Cosmos development with, you know, when AIB collapsed in 2020, and then there was there were a lot of challenges organizationally and just a lot of missing development, you know, it was clear from the Informal perspective that we needed to pivot to kind of take better care of Cosmos. And so, you know, we would over time get more involved in Tendermint and Go, and eventually were appointed to basically be the stewards of that project and to kind of rebuild the team there. And same with the Cosmos Hub. Both Tendermint and the Hub had experienced, you know, very significant challenges over the years in terms of their team, in terms of turnover, organizational challenges. And so, you know, finally in 2020, Informal was given the opportunity to step up and try to recover and resurrect both of those teams. And you know, that's part of how we ended up growing to be the largest development team in Cosmos.
Yeah, so to summarize, I think the vertical that we do for the ICF are the Cosmos Hub, Tendermint, now that is now Comet, and IBC through Hermes. Mm-hmm. And then Apalachee, like the work we do on Apalachee. Is that what people should remember for what we do?
Some of the work we do on Apalachee, yeah. Some of it's funded out of pocket or from other grants from other places, but definitely the ICF has contributed significantly as well. But yeah, that's right.
Okay, so let's move on to the ICF now. Let's do the same thing. Like, what's your role at the ICF, and how do you come to occupy that role?
Yeah, this is a lot more complicated, I guess. The ICF. So, you know, we set up the ICF in 2017. I was the vice president. Jay was the president of the board. So the board of the ICF is called the Foundation Council. That's the sort of highest level governing body. You know, boards aren't really day-to-day entities. They're more, you know, we're supposed to meet quarterly and sign off on budgets and stuff. The ICF started hiring employees in 2018. We hired a CFO and an accountant in Switzerland to start like operationalizing things. But then me and Ariane and Jarko and Greg left All In Bits in 2018-19 and moved to the ICF to start building up a team there. And so at that point, we actually became employees of the ICF and we built up a team of like 10 or 12 people. But, you know, due to various issues and sort of, you know, the history between Jay and I and other kinds of challenges, that team ended up spinning out. That was all planned in like the summer of 2019. And then it spun out in 2020. And the plan at that point was that Informal, which was the spin out, and All In Bits would kind of work together. And All In Bits was still employing basically everyone, all the core development. work together, like support the ICF's funding program and stuff like that, because AllInBits was the main development entity. It was supposed to be responsible for all the kind of core software and the hub and all this stuff. And we had been trying to build out, you know, a funding program and other streams of development at the ICF. And so when we spun out, you know, we were gonna be collaborating with AIB to support all that. The AIB blew up and February or something like that. And so we had to set up the subsidiary of the ICF that was called IG, Interchange GmbH, to basically hire back like 20 of the employees that quit, and a few others didn't end up being hired there for various reasons, mostly jurisdictional kind of stuff. But anyway, finally, in 2020 at the ICF, we brought on new members to the Foundation Council. That was Brian Crane and Fernando Pedone. And then in 2021, Jay decided finally to step down from the Foundation Council. So that's when I became president. Brian became vice president. And that's kind of how it's been ever since. But I don't really have a kind of day-to-day job at the foundation. I'm not, you know, I haven't been an employee there since 2019. So I'm really just a board member. And the role of the president is really just, you know, to call meetings and to split ties. But I don't think there's ever been a tie. And I do call the meetings once a quarter. Yeah.
Okay, so you're a meeting once a quarter. Is that like the extent of your involvement with the ICF, or is there anything else you do?
We talk more than that. The Foundation Council, and you know, I do try to work with some of the team there, but you know, I try to support the work they're doing on whatever's going on. And last year, I was trying to be a lot more operationally involved, at least in Interchange GmbH, because they're the initial leadership of that company basically also kind of collapsed. So IG was never really stabilized. You know, they had like Billy wrote a long thread about this last year when he left, because he was part of that leadership team, but. You know, it was like Billy, Anna, Chris, and Tess when they left AllInBits. That was sort of the de facto leadership of IG. And so I would mostly try to support them. But then Chris left, you know, to start Anoma after IBC shipped. And then Tess left because she got an offer from Twitter. And so, you know, Billy and Tess kind of came to me and were like, we need you to be more involved. Like, we're kind of bleeding here. Can you help us? Can you step in more actively? And so I tried to step in more actively in 2022. I ran into a lot of challenges and that I wasn't able to surmount at IG alone. And so that led to kind of a bunch of the teams at IG being spun out, some into informal with that was Tendermint in the hub, and then Binary, the SDK got spun out into Binary. And so IG got significantly slimmed down. So I still try to support things at, you know, kind of day to day at the ICF, but I'm not really, you know, I don't really have like active day to day authorities basically. You know, I can recommend things, but people don't seem to have to listen to me. So it's been, you know, it's not like at Informal, I'm the CEO. I can make calls, you know, I can fire people. I can kind of do stuff at the ICF. It's, you know, I'm just a board member, so I don't really, the role is very different.
Okay. So let's talk about the people that you mentioned. So who are the people that called the shots at the ICF, aside from, you know, the I guess you're the ultimate decision maker here.
The Foundation Council is the ultimate decision maker. So that's right now, that's me, Brian, and Fernando. So that requires a sort of majority vote of the Foundation Council for sort of top level decisions. But again, that's not like, not supposed to be a day-to-day operational body. It's not like everything the ICF does has to go to the Foundation Council. There's a management team that's currently led by Maria. In 2023, so in January, we also brought on Chris, who joined Maria on the board of management. So they run the ICF, day to day, along with, you know, the other 10 or so staff at the ICF. They're sort of managing the operations, the finances, and all that sort of stuff.
So let's differentiate between the ICF, the Swiss Foundation, and IG in Berlin. So can you explain the activities of both?
Yeah, so I know there's been a lot of confusion about that distinction over the years. So in 2020, IG was created as a wholly owned subsidiary of the ICF. So the ICF is a nonprofit, so it has no shareholders. And then IG was created as a company in Germany that's wholly owned by the ICF. So the only shareholders in IG is the ICF. And that entity was created to hire the 20 people who had quit All in Bits so that they could keep working on, what was Tendermint and IBC and a few other things at the time. So IG was basically set up as like an emergency vehicle to hire everyone. And it sort of evolved over time. The team there wanted to, it wasn't clear if they were going to spin out again in the future. And they wanted to like really double down on being, on the sort of Interchain brand and building that up and running the funding program and that sort of stuff. But there was kind of a separation between ICF and IG, and there's, various regulatory reasons for that based on where the sort of leadership is and things like that. But IG has since become a lot smaller because most of the team, most of the development, so there was always a kind of mix of concerns there because there was the development teams there that were working on Tendermint and IBC, but then there was also the funding program where a lot of the work was happening, was also leveraging people who were working at IG, and that was challenging also for various reasons, and so ultimately that all got restructured. So most of the development was spun out. There's still the IBC team, the IBC Go team is there, but the funding team is now really operating at the level of the ICF. And there's also there's like a comms marketing kind of governance team at IG as well. But the IG ICF distinction isn't as relevant anymore now that there's sort of leadership at the ICF and the funding program is running there and stuff. It's kind of it's just sort of thought of as the Interchain entity, I guess, collectively. Yeah.
Well, I think that gives a good background about how things are set up. Mm-hmm. We also went over this in way more detail on the YouTube, so people can always check that out. Today I want to talk about how these two things intersect, Informa and the ICF. I think that's why everyone is here today, actually. They want to hear you talk about the conflict of interest. Let's talk a little bit about that. How do you manage that?
Yeah, so I don't vote on any decision the ICF makes about Informal. I don't have a vote. So anytime Informal gets a contract with the ICF or is going to get money or anything like that, it has to be recommended by the board of management and approved by the other foundation council members. So that's always been the case, and that's still the case today. Most of the reason that Informal grew to the size it did was because it was the most stable organization in the Cosmos ecosystem after the collapse of All in Bits. Informal has kind of had, it's got me there. I'm the co-founder of Cosmos. I mean, people talk about the conflict, I'm the co-founder of Cosmos first and foremost. These organizations are all vehicles, to realize the development and realization of Cosmos. Ideally, we all would have just stayed at All in Bits and there never would have been a problem. We all would have worked together and there wouldn't have been this massive fragmentation, but c'est la vie, and so things have been a lot more complicated than maybe they had to be or should have been. And so Informal, because it spun out before the whole All in Bits crisis, and because it has me and Ariane and Jarko, very strong leadership team, essentially, it's been a sort of stable reservoir of capacity to support the rest of the ecosystem. And so repeatedly over the years, as there have been issues elsewhere and missing development capacity or sort of gaps or organizational challenges, Informal has been called on and has stepped up to help. And so, that's what led ultimately to the growth of Informal, was people coming to us and being like, hey, we need your help. We need you to, can you step up here? Can you stop working on Tendermint and Rust because that's not a priority? And can you work on Tendermint and Go? And can you build a team for the Cosmos Hub? Because, we've been trying and failing to do that for 4 years. Whenever those decisions are being made, I'm not allowed to vote. It's pretty basic conflict of interest management. So, yeah.
Yeah. So not voting is one. I think, can you describe like the process from the moment where a company wants to contribute to Cosmos, wants to get funded by the ICF, what does one has to go through to get there?
Yeah. So there was always a, like application process. So you fill out a form and propose a budget and all that sort of stuff. Starting in late 2021, though, we started doing a really big internal restructuring. So because the leadership team at IG had basically half of them had left, they had tried to build a hub team at IG in 2021, and that didn't work out. They hired someone to lead it, and then they left after like 6 months. Billy was stretched really thin on the funding program. There was just like too much going on. There was the whole Gravity Bridge fiasco thing, and there were obviously a lot of organizational, you know, challenges recovering from the fallout from AIB. And so we started a sort of major restructuring process, and that's pretty much when the new teams coming in sort of halted. The transparency reporting kind of halted. A lot of like previous programs kind of stopped so that we could really focus internally and restructure everything so that we could build up all the processes so that we could get back to, you know, opening up the grants and doing proper transparency and sort of all that stuff. And that's finally where we're starting to get to now. You know, now that we finally got the transparency out about all the things in 22, that was only really possible because of all the new systems that were put in place. And so the whole internal process and structure and the way things are tracked and accounted for and reported got a major upgrade over the course of the year. And so hopefully now that that's kind of mostly behind us, we can start with opening up, you know, ICF, the ICF like funding program more broadly and sort of connecting back to the wider community of, developers and ecosystem contributors and so on.
Right. So let's say I'm a team in Cosmos. I fill the form, right? I fill the application form. I give a budget. I have an idea of something I want to build. What happens next? You know, who's in touch with me? Who's kind of attending my request and who's giving me news? And internally, what is the decision making process for approving rejecting the grant?
In principle, I mean, the way this worked. This happened a few different ways, but in principle, the way this works is it's processed by the grants team at the ICF. They'll write up, you know, their sort of assessments of it. There's been a few different instances of what we've called a technical advisory board, and so they would also review the different grants and make their recommendations based on that. And then the board of management, which is essentially the.
All right, welcome back, guys. Sorry, I don't know what. Had some technical difficulties. I'm just waiting for Tebow to join back. Thanks everyone for coming out. Tebow, you're here. Invite to co-host. Cool. You good?
Hey.
Yeah.
So we got rugged. I think people are going to think it was on purpose. We were just talking about the conflict of interest and it just dropped at the worst possible moment.
Damn. Where did it drop?
I don't know. You were talking about the process of accepting applications.
Yeah. Oh, I said so much before I probably realized it was dropped. So, does anyone know? Anyone remember what the last sort of thing that was heard was?
Yeah, it was you talking about the way the board of management is reviewing the application. So you can start there. You know, like the form is filled.
Okay, sure.
What happens next?
Yeah, so the form is filled, it comes in, it's reviewed by the grants team. There has typically also been like a technical advisory board in the past. We've been through a few instances of that. And so they would also review all the applications, and then the board of management, which is basically the day-to-day like executive body, would kind of synthesize everything. And make a recommendation to the foundation council, who would then approve or reject. So that's been the process. Whether it's been like open grants or not. So like I was saying before, it was sort of a closed process in for 2020
for 22 and three. Well, in 2022, I don't remember when exactly it closed, but there was a lot of teams being funded in at least in 21, and there's still quite a few in 22. If you see the report, you'll see how many, you know, there's tons of teams in there. But there was a lot of growth being, I don't remember if I talked about the growth, but there was a lot of growth being encouraged, especially at the end of 2021. You know, the markets were booming and Cosmos was heating up. And so, you know, there was a lot of demand for sort of further expansion on all the teams, and the ICF was supporting all the teams, basically hiring and expanding kind of across the board to fill all the, you know, to fill, I mean, we had, I don't remember if I said, if I cut off before saying all this, but, you know, we had this, we had suffered this massive organizational setback in 2020 and had never really recovered, and we still didn't have a hub team and all this kind of stuff. And so the ICF was really trying to encourage, you know, teams to bring on more capacity, to work on all the different things and help everything move forward. But then of course, in 2022, there was the big market crash with Terra and everything. And so the ICF sent out a letter in the summer saying, hey, we're going to halt hiring, so don't expand any further. And so everyone got that letter and then, you know, started preparing for further cuts in 2023. And so then all the existing teams were invited to submit their proposals for 2023. And then that went through the new TAB that we set up late last year. And so the TAB was, you know, very heavily involved in reviewing those proposals and sort of making the recommendations on how the budget, should be cut. And so basically everyone faced cuts going into 2023. And that's how that was all worked out. And so hopefully moving forward, there will be the funding program will open up again, there'll be like an open general one. There will, you know, at some point be a new TAB again with sort of hopefully more kind of diverse, personnel. The TAB we did this time was all like people who have been around for a long time and, you know, were part of sort of the original team at All in Bits. Yeah, I guess that's, most of it.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about the transparency report. I think some, where I guess some people, you know, have a problem potentially, you know, talking about conflict of interest and that. Mm-hmm. Informa is by far the team that received the most funding from the ICF in 2022. Mm-hmm. And the amount, I mean, some people thought the amount was pretty big, even, you know, if you divide by the number of people that actually work across the different teams that we have. Mm-hmm. Yeah, can you speak to that? Like, why are we the team that received the most funding? And, you know, is it like an unfair number that we pay people, or at least that the ICF covers?
On the rate side, so I think all the top teams all have similar rates. They all work out to around like 300K. I think Informa somewhere in the middle. So there's a few teams who their per head comes out higher, closer to 350. And I think there's others that are, you know, 280 or something. I mean, anyone can do the math, just divide the numbers. And then there's also those atom bonuses. And so other teams, you know, maybe they have lower dollars per head, but they have more atoms per head. So you have to kind of take it all. You have to take it all into account. 300,000 per person isn't for a contractor, because these are all contractors to the ICF. You have to keep in mind, like, you know, what Cosmos thing or something before all of these teams were being paid by the ICF. It was All in Bits being paid by the ICF, you know, millions of dollars a year to build all the core pieces. And then All in Bits blew up and everything kind of spread out. And there were major gaps. And over the years, like I was saying before, the most sort of stable, consistent organization had been Informa. And Informa Informa never wanted to build a Cosmos Hub team. That wasn't really the goal or the intention, but given like repeated failings to build the Cosmos Hub team elsewhere and, you know, repeated issues with getting things on chain and, you know, the Gravity Bridge stuff and the DEX and all that stuff. Like, you know, finally Informa was like, okay, we should build interchain security. And the ICF, you know, wanted to fund that. And again, I don't vote on when the ICF decides to fund Informa, I don't have a vote. So it has to be, recommended by the board of management and approved by the other foundation council members. And so repeatedly that happened because, you know, there were obviously huge issues and Informa had the
capacity and the competence and the context and the experience and so on to make an offer to step up to fill a gap. And so, you know, those offers were repeatedly accepted, essentially. And so Informal continued to grow, probably more than me or anyone at Informal really wanted it to. I mean, it's been a lot to take on all these responsibilities, and, you know, field doesn't always feel like the most, the thing that's most in Informal's business interest. I mean, there's other things, you know, from, like we've had to throttle our business priorities repeatedly, to kind of better serve core Cosmos development because we were so worried that about how things were going there. So, you know, we like turned down audit clients in 2021 because we were like, no, instead of doing audits for people, we should actually spend our time focusing on core Cosmos, and, you know, same with like the validator and stuff. So, you know, we kept making those decisions to put our own business interests on hold to support Cosmos. And that led to growth. It's not like we haven't been paid for it, obviously, but, you know, I don't think the payments are like egregious or unreasonable given all the responsibilities Informal's taken on. And it hasn't even been my decision anyway to do it. So, you know, hopefully that's all clear. But, you know, I think Informal's budget will continue to be reduced, moving forward along with others. And I think we'd like to see the hub, at least the core hub team, funded majority or primarily from the hub itself. Now, I mean, you also have to keep in mind there was never a community pool, right? Like, first of all, all of the atoms that were at All in Bits are still stuck at All in Bits. And instead of being used to incentivize core development, they're, you know, now being used to fight ridiculous fucking lawsuits and stuff. So we had this incentive collapse along with the organizational collapse, and all these people that were core to building Cosmos weren't given enough atoms out of All in Bits, myself included, but that's another matter. So the ICF was left to like fund all this stuff and distribute the atoms, and the community pool on the hub was like, you know, never had really anything in it. So, you know, finally we increased it to the 10% or whatever. So that's good. So now the pool has funding, and obviously we're seeing it fund a lot of stuff. So hopefully we'll see it start to fund development more directly, and we'll see other teams step up to fund things more directly. And so the ICF funding for things will start to reduce. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we'll want to talk briefly about the lawsuits. It's a bit of a hot topic right now.
Yeah.
But let's keep going a little bit more about the ICF.
Okay.
Something I want to add to that is, like, we have at Informal, you know, a very high number of PhDs in distributed system, computer science. I think, you know, I asked HR, we have like 20 people with this kind of, like higher up education. And these people aren't cheap in general. And I think that's the people you want for Comet. And that's the people you want for.
Yeah,
for,
I think we have like 19 people with PhDs. And, you know, these people get offers from like AWS for like $1 million a year. So obviously we can't compete with $1 million a year. And we're not asking the ICF to pay people $1 million a year. But somehow they continue to work at Informal rather than at AWS for way more money. You know, maybe it won't always be like that, but I think we've built a pretty special culture, and you know, we're pretty proud of the company hat we have and how we take care of employees. But it's certainly, there's a lot of really talented, smart people here, and they could be working in many other places. So, you know, I mean, many communities have this problem of like, hey, you need to actually pay your devs what they're worth, and you know, probably a lot of communities aren't doing a good enough job at that. You know, you hear it all the time in like the Ethereum community, that like, you know, six people or whatever it is that held up Go Ethereum for all those years, and you know, and then you have people complaining that they're overpaid. Like, if anything, your developers are probably underpaid in most you know, almost all the time. So yeah, 300 and again, when you're talking about like you do that division and you get around 300k for all those top companies, you know, some a bit more, some a bit less, plus the atoms, like, it's not like all of that is going to the individuals. The companies have to has made it so that that's not the case. I mean, I guess that was never the case because it was always being paid in AIB. But, you know, at least when people worked at AIB, there was the massive AIB treasury, and they were all supposed to be incentivized through their AIB equity, which was supposed to, you know, at least notionally give them exposure to the atoms on the AIB balance sheet. But, you know, that incentive wasn't enough to keep everyone there because they all ended up leaving. And so now there's all these atoms at AIB, and yeah, it's kind of some dead weight. So we're wrestling with all these problems.
Okay, I think we covered that pretty good. We'll see if people in the audience have questions later. For now, let's talk about the two things that the ICF promised and then didn't deliver for a while, and then did like quite recently. So the first thing would be the delegation program. Can you? So you're putting your ICF hat back on.
Yeah, I have to switch hats a lot. So I have physical hats. And so when I wear my informal hat when I'm doing informal stuff, and I put the ICF hat on. So what are you asking? The delegation program? What about it?
I think last year there was a bit of complaint about that. It was delegated. There was some validators that were basically inactive or not contributing.
Yeah, right. That hadn't been an update in a long time. Yeah. So we moved to the ICF in 2019, Ariane and I and Jarko and Greg, we moved from AIB because we wanted to build up the programs at the ICF. We wanted to expand development beyond all in bits. We wanted to run a delegation program and all that. So we started a very serious delegation program where all the validators could apply, and we evaluated their criteria, and a bunch of our employees were involved in sort of ranking stuff. And it was a huge amount of work, but it was good. We did the delegations, and then we spun out by basically January 2020 into informal. I think the delegations were done in the summer of 2019, and the plan was going to be to update them like once a year. But we spun out, and then all in bits blew up, and there were just like so many other things going on that they kind of weren't attended to for a while. And then the new team at IG, was dealing with all the like complexity of funding the multi-stakeholder beast, as I call it, which is what the Cosmos ecosystem became. And so, repeatedly the sort of updating the delegations kept getting deprioritized for all the other fires that were popping up that had to be put out. And I think by late 21, early 2022, we started talking about, okay, we have to resurrect the delegation program again. It's stale, it's old, we have to update it. But there weren't people that really wanted to do it or work on it, and there were supposed to be some people to do it, but it kind of didn't happen, and other things kind of kept taking priority until finally I think Daniela joined in the summer or something and decided to take it on, and so did the work of actually like drafting the program and working with the community to set everything out, and so that was like back in like September last year. But then when it came time to actually evaluate the proposals, they didn't have the technical capacity to actually do the evaluations. And so then there were all these delays about like finding people that could help them actually technically evaluate things. And so so that delayed things a while. And then finally they released the final decision. That might have been like a month or two ago, I guess. And then we wanted to, before actually doing the delegations, we wanted to turn over the ICF wallets, to bring on, new multi-signers and just change over the wallets, which are still from the original fundraiser. So that took a bit of time to get everyone to, set up the keys and test the multi-sig and do all that stuff. So, finally all that got done, and the delegations were sort of proceeding while the wallets were being turned over. So as funds moved into the new wallets, they would get delegated. We're sort of working from the bottom up, from the smallest delegations to the largest. And so I think we just completed the last delegation like 2 days ago or something. So it's done now, finally. And everyone got their delegation. And hopefully it'll be updated every 6 months or so. And but it's a lot of work to review all the stuff and do the delegations and so on. I mean, thank God for Auth-Z. It makes things a lot cleaner or easier to actually make the delegations, but yeah.
Yeah. So next coming up is the updation of this delegation program. I think that's going to be every 3 or 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that clarified the process. Let's move on to the other one. And that's probably the big one, the transparency report.
Mm.
So there was a long time without a transparency report in Cosmos from the ICF.
Yeah.
Can you, so you were at the ICF in 2020.
19.
Can you explain 2019, you live in 2020, yeah. So what was the process of this transparency report back then, and where did it drop off, and how did it resume
Yeah, so there weren't like annual reports. There were just blogs. And so we were blogging pretty regularly about the funding program and putting out requests for proposals and announcing who was getting funding. And then when IG was set up in 2020 and Billy started taking over that stuff. And so he took over blogging, and then we started putting out like a quarterly update as a blog with like the amount of funds committed for that year and a snapshot of the treasury. And so I think the last one of those came out sometime around mid 2020 or something. It might have been about Q1 or sorry 2021. It might have been about Q1 2021 that you got the last update on like the ICF treasury. But a lot of the treasury is public anyway. You just find the Bitcoin and Ether address and the Atom address, and then you can look at it, at least the crypto side of things. The internal restructuring began in like the fall, and Billy moved from running the funding program to leading the hub team. So you know, it was kind of there's trade-offs everywhere. If you don't have enough people, you have to choose priorities. And so, you know, at the time the ICF prioritized actually rebuilding the hub, which had basically never in its history, it was kind of crazy to say, but never in its history really had a team. And so Billy stepped up to move over from the funding program to do that, and Maria came in around then and started like completely revamping the whole funding program to really put in the time to like structure it properly to be able to do all the accounting and everything. And so the plan was always that once we had gotten all that through, then after 2022 we would publish the report about 2022, which was basically what was missing, because there was there's numbers from 2021 on the blog post. You can see amounts that were committed. It's probably not fully there, but the system completely turned over, right? So there was a whole new system put in place in 2022 for actually tracking everything and doing the accounting and what it was for and all the reporting. And so that was the system that enabled the report that just came out to actually come out in the way it did. And I think, I haven't looked at that many other transparency reports from other foundations, but the ICF might be the most transparent foundation in all of crypto now. So we went from low to pretty high. So it took a while. It takes a while because the ICF has never had consistent leadership for more than like 18 months at a time, if even that. And it kind of more or less takes that kind of time to get through a year and account for all the data and produce your transparency report, by the end of Q1 or sort of early Q2 about the prior year. That's sort of standard standard sort of thing. The ICF does have a reporting requirement to the, as a Swiss nonprofit, it has to report to the annual, to the government. It has like a government auditor, and it has to publish an annual report to the government every year. So the ICF has always done that, but the contracts have always been such that agreement was required to disclose things, because those are just like standard clauses. And so that led to a bunch of complexity about getting approval from all the teams. And so even with this report, we didn't even get approval from all the teams to publish the numbers. So some of the teams weren't listed. I think either I don't know if they actually have a problem with it. They just either didn't respond or responded no. Again, I'm not too involved in the day-to-day, so I don't really know all the details. But yeah, transparency is like, you have to keep in mind, like, it's easy with DAOs and all this stuff. It's transparent by default, but these incumbent legacy entities are not transparent by default. And so you have to build transparency as a function, and building a function, takes time, and you want to do it right, and you want to build up the processes and the systems and all that stuff. And it took a while to get there. So, finally we're there, and it should be relatively consistent moving forward. So, I think everyone's looking forward to that, and hopefully Cosmos at this point will be able to sort of lead by example all the rest of all the other foundations and ecosystems in terms of transparency. But Cosmos is so unique. I mean, like so many other crypto ecosystems, they have a foundation and they have a development entity, and all the money goes to the development entity, and it's controlled by the executives of the development entity, and that's how everything gets done. And in Cosmos, it's like the original development entity collapsed and is now like, you know, Byzantine, and is suing people, and you have a bunch of other entities who are trying to do the work. And, you know, so they're getting funding from the foundation, and we've been basically trying to rebuild, you know, the core development entities ever since the AIB fallout. And, you know, the existence of that additional complexity and the transparency that's now coming with it is leading everyone to like ask all these questions and whatever, which is fine. But like, you know, just keep in mind the broader context of how other things work and how different Cosmos is from all these other ecosystems and the, you know, both the challenges and opportunity that that presents to us. So,
yeah. Anyway.
Right. I've actually asked Andrea, he's in this call today, to actually check if the ICF is the most transparent foundation in Cosmos and outside of Cosmos. I was also wondering the same question. Like, I don't know how many of them in the top 20 are actually publishing any transparency report. That would be like an interesting answer that may surprise some people.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be cool to know.
Yeah. Okay. We're almost on time, at least for me. I mean, you can stay and take questions, but I think we'll have another space for the Cosmos Hub. Talk a little bit about the history of the Cosmos Hub and who's working on the Cosmos Hub right now, and probably another one about the AIB stuff, because it is something that we should talk about.
The what?
The AIB stuff, the lawsuit, and the new prop on the Cosmos Hub forum.
Oh my God! Yeah. So this fucking lawsuit. I mean, everyone is against this lawsuit. This lawsuit is like the worst, absolutely terrible. I think we're all equally disgusted about it. I have been, I message Jay every so often to try to convince him to drop it. You know, it's my birthday today, so I asked him if he would drop the lawsuit as a birthday present, but so far he hasn't responded. Yeah, I don't know. The guy thinks this is somehow, you know, he thinks he's responding to toxicity in the space. And you know, there is a lot of toxicity in our community, and it's really disappointing to see. And there's a lot of what seems to be like bad faith and negativity and attacks and so on. But suing someone is by far the worst thing that has ever happened from a toxicity perspective. And yet somehow he thinks that it's you know, that it's his way of fighting back against it, and doesn't see that it's so much worse than anything else that has ever happened. So, you know, I agree with the fact that, hey, you know, there's a lot of toxicity. I think I'm even referenced in the fucking suit as like the guy who's asking us all to just love each other more, which is really what I believe. I wish we could all just like, you know, be nicer to each other and show more empathy, and everyone's working really hard. And, you know, often a lot of the attacks are coming from places of like, you know, misunderstanding or miscommunication or whatever. So I agree with that. But the solution to achieving that is obviously not to fucking sue someone. And it's just so sad that he doesn't see that and that he thinks this is going to be the right way forward. So I'm still hoping that I'll manage to convince him to drop it. You know, I mean, obviously I feel bad for Grace, who has to deal with this. But yeah, on the proposal, I don't know that it's something the Cosmos Hub community pool should be funding. I think there's obviously a lot of controversy about that already. You know, I think you can be against both the lawsuit and it being and the defense being funded by the hub. I think Grace has a GoFundMe, and so people are starting to contribute to that, and we'll probably contribute to that as well. But yeah, I'm still hoping I'll be able to convince Jay to drop it. But yeah, I mean, it's fucking my atoms are locked up in all in bits, and he's using, you know, my money and everyone else's to mount this thing. So no one wants this to happen. And ideally, all in bits would just liquidate and give everyone their atoms, and we can move on with our lives. But yeah, I don't know if we'll get that. Anyway,
you are quoting the lawsuit as a happy hippie that just says, everyone should love each other.
Yeah, I heard I was quoted in the lawsuit, and I got really freaked out. And then I went and looked at it, and oh man, it's not. I, you know, I feel bad that he's like using me to make his point. So I don't, you know, we have a strict no working with Jay policy until he drops this fucking lawsuit now. So, I'll just keep messaging him. He responds and just tries to defend himself, but. Yeah, trying to get him to understand that this isn't the way forward. And yeah, we'll see if he responds to my birthday present thing. That'd be nice. Be a good birthday present.
So far, just a Twitter space as a birthday place.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, I'll bring people up. We have someone. We have Ray. I'm gonna see if I can accept and approve Ray. Let's see if this works.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm Canadian. Someone asked me if I'm Canadian because of my accent. Obviously, I'm Canadian. Yeah.
It doesn't seem like I can approve. Can you try it?
What am I approving?
A request from Ray to speak.
How do I see that? Who is Ray? Where would I see that?
I have something called requested. I can see a request, but I cannot approve right now. We need a Twitter space expert.
Yeah. Does anyone know? Ray. Yeah, invite speaker. Oops. What happened? No, he disappeared.
Oh, hey, it works.
You here?
Yep. Hey, thanks for taking a question. I just had a quick question. When you were talking about the transparency report, I just want to make sure I understood what you said. You were getting sign off from all of the people to include them in the transparency report. So if they didn't agree to be, if they didn't sign off, they're not included. Is the transparency report complete, or are there funding pieces missing?
Yeah, I mean, there might have been a few that we didn't hear back from, but they're small. So most of the, you know, the top five are the top five and are most of the spending. But there was sort of a long tail of teams that got, I don't know, a few hundred K or something like that. So there might be a few of those that are missing. I don't know the exact number offhand, but I'm not sure we got the approval from everyone.
Yeah. Okay, that was my only question. I just wanted to make sure. So it's not a complete report, but it's like you've made your best effort to get a hold of this.
It's a complete report. It just doesn't say it might be missing some of the funding. Like the total numbers that are in there are the total numbers of how much the ICF spent and what it was spent on and all that stuff. But then there's a table of entities, and that might not fully add up to the total because there might be some. Or they might all just be listed in smaller grants. Yeah. So if you look at the table, there's at the end there, it says smaller grants. So I think that probably just includes everyone else.
Cool. That's all I had to ask. Thanks.
Yeah.
Anyone else wants to ask a question to Ethan about the report, about AIB, about informal system, about the weather?
About the history of banking. I mean, I'll talk for another hour or two about, you know, 16th century exchange bankers and what the fuck they were up to.
About Ko-Fi. Well,
happy birthday, by the way, too.
Hey, thanks.
Okay, no question today.
God, so no one wants to know about the history of banking? Oh, there's a request.
Yeah.
What is this? Can you speak, Dan?
Oh, quick question. Hey, guys. Are you coming to Consensus?
Yeah.
Nice. Would be great to meet.
Cool. I'll be around.
Cheers.
Cool.
We'll be at the IBC Summit. We'll be at the main event. I think there's a bunch of side events lined up. So, yeah.
Nice. I'll be there. Would be great to catch up.
Awesome. Yeah. Come find me. I'll be around. Anything else?
It's okay on my side. I've asked some of the question I had. I think we should do another one. You know, we're going on the hour here. Let's do another one for the Cosmos Hub. It's a big topic.
Okay. Oh, I see another request here from Pharaoh. What's up, Pharaoh? First of all, which kingdom are you from?
18th dynasty.
18th. Okay, that's a good one. Yeah. What's up?
So I don't know if you chatted about this at all, but do you have comments on 791?
That's the to fund Grace's defense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was just talking about this towards the end. Informal voted no, I think no with veto. I mean, I went on about how we're very much against the lawsuit and against what Jay is doing, and currently have a no working with Jay or all in bits policy. But it was our position that
you know, this shouldn't be funded from the hub. Grace has a GoFundMe page. People should support that. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry for checking in late, but yeah, I appreciate
it. No, that's fine. That's fine. Good luck with the Sea Peoples, huh? That's an 18th Dynasty thing, right? Sea Peoples, maybe not. Yeah, I think it was. All right. And that was a joke that went over everyone's head. Oh, I guess because I can't hear you. I don't know if you're laughing. So I'm just going to assume everyone's laughing at my joke. Yeah.
Everyone's laughing. Everyone's laughing.
What's up, Augustine?
What's up? What's up? I'm curious. I'm not sure if you chimed in on this, but what cutting edge research in blockchain are you currently staying up to date with?
What am I staying up to date with? The cutting edge research I'm staying up to date with is what happened in the 16th century, which I think is one of the most important research topics in all of the blockchain space that no one is paying attention to, because something very important happened that led to the birth of central banks and the modern banking system. And it's not what most people think. It's a lot more complicated than what most people think. It has to do with the collapse of a prior international privately organized banking system. And that generated its own collapse. Its activity actually generated its own collapse that led to the rise of the central banks of the 17th century that put us on this track towards thinking we need blockchains in the first place. So I'm certain I'm not answering your question in the way you want me to, because you probably want me to talk about like zero knowledge proofs or rollups or, you know, all of this exciting stuff. But while I am excited about all these things, I'm here to fix the monetary and financial system. And I think most of the blockchain space has lost the plot, and everyone's fighting over, you know, which platform is going to have the most liquidity provided on it. And that is exactly the wrong question, precisely the wrong question, and suffers from all of the same problems that the banking system suffered from. And so blockchain communities are wrong for the same reason that banking is wrong. And it really pains me to see our ecosystem follow in the footsteps of the bankers. And yeah, our stuff is transparent and censorship resistant and yada, yada, yada. That's all great. But if we don't actually understand the problems of banking properly and go after them properly, then we're just going to reproduce the same mess. And we're already seeing that. I mean, Wall Street is already in and it's dominating, and you know, the whole space is being co-opted. So I think really understanding the history and the sort of nature and science of money and banking is the most important problem that we can be working on. It's something we're working actively on at Informal through a new effort that we call collaborative finance. Which got a bit of funding from the ICF in 2022, but that was cut in 2023. So now we're funding that ourselves. But I think this is, you know, probably the most important project, and it's what I'm trying to spend my time on. So we're writing a white paper, and we'll explain everything that's wrong with both blockchains and banking in that paper, or at least give an overview. But the goal is actually not liquidity providing, but liquidity saving. The goal is to discharge the most amount of debt with the least amount of liquidity. And of course, no one in blockchain wants to think about debt or credit, because everyone just wants to have their assets and wants the price of the assets to go up. But, you know, that's what the bankers wanted too. So, you know, the blockchainers are just doing what the bankers are doing, and I don't really blame them. You know, that's just self-interest and the structure of the capitalist system. So, you know, that's all fine, but we need to go back to a proper credit theory of money, understand the distinction between credit and assets in the theory of money, in the dynamics of money, and build systems that can properly address that. With a specific focus on reducing the amount of liquidity needed to discharge the maximum amount of debt, so that we can, you know, get people out of debt, reduce systemic risk, and all this sort of stuff. But what's interesting about the approach we're taking is that there is a natural CoFi kind of provides a, you know, we're going to have to do a whole other space on, I guess, on CoFi so I can really get into this. But I'm glad you asked so that I could give you guys a pitch of, you know, what I want to be working about, what I want to be working on, rather than all the, you know, Cosmos drama and stuff. CoFi provides a sort of natural membrane or boundary between more community-focused and local kind of monetary systems and the global financial, you know, high liquidity sort of monetary system. And so it provides a way for DeFi protocols to plug in to the real world, so that all the liquidity-providing stuff everyone's experimenting with and playing with can actually be leveraged to benefit the settlements for real world businesses and the reduction of debt for real world businesses. So that's what we're working on. There's some really cool research in there. So if you go to cofi.informal.systems and read the FAQ and read the paper that's linked there on liquidity saving through obligation clearing, I think that's probably one of the most important papers to come out in years. All the authors of that paper now work at Informal. So that's the stuff I'm most interested in is sort of you know, credit clearing, but doing it in a privacy preserving way, which requires us to use some, you know, zero knowledge proof technology and stuff like that. So that's stuff I'm really I am pretty excited about. But if you want to talk about blockchain things, I mean, obviously all this zero knowledge stuff is super interesting and important. But one of the other things we're starting to look at is what kind of integrations we can build between the consensus technology and the interoperability technology. So between like the Tendermint consensus algorithm that runs in Comet and IBC, and finding ways to make IBC more of like a first class primitive of consensus, so that we can have like more advanced kinds of protocols running between blockchains and find new ways to share security over the interchain and stuff like that. So we'll probably be publishing on lots more about that. We did a bit of work on like mesh security, and obviously we're leading the interchain security and all this kind of stuff. So there's lots of exciting stuff, but I think the most important is the research on credit networks and clearing and saving liquidity. Yeah.
Fantastic. So would you say that that's kind of the focusing on the first principle of coordinating with money, or what would be like the first principles you're tackling here?
Yeah, the idea is to actually, economics has really fucked up. So the 20th century was like a complete write-off. All this neoclassical economics garbage. Even the Austrians, it's really immature and naive. And so we need to understand money as a network of obligations. And we need to actually look at the structure. So we need like a network theory, right? Like everyone wants to start from game theory and like supply and demand calculus, but it's completely insufficient to actually address the problem of money and finance in the real world. We need a network theory of money. So we need to be using like graph theory, graph algorithms to actually understand the flows and not confuse stocks and flows. And you know, everyone, you know, in economics is, I think there's some like quip that's like economics is a science of confusing stocks and flows. So we need to separate that. We need to focus on the flows. We need to understand the structure of the channels through which money flows and the actual graph that it's flowing in. Because by exposing that, you can get a lot of information and we can save a lot of liquidity, reduce systemic risk, and provide a sort of a substrate or a foundation from which we can actually start creating new kinds of monies in a much more informed and grounded way. I mean, what's so exciting about blockchains is obviously that, you know, it allows communities to issue monies to represent their values in sort of new ways, but we're still kind of constrained by proof of work, proof of stake. There's a little bit more experimentation going on, but we need to transcend that much more fundamentally and really connect to like real world phenomena. And we're still missing. And I think the missing piece of that is a proper network theory of money. And that's what we're trying to build. So, you know, forget the last 100 years of economics and finance. The classical economists from like the 19th century and the 18th century and even the 17th, which is sort of when it got started, are actually a lot more interesting. Because, you know, the major difference was they understood that the problems of the economy were problems of surplus. It's like, first you have to produce enough for everyone to reproduce, and then you're going to have all this leftover. And then what do you do with the leftover surplus stuff? And like, let's manage the surplus. And, you know, that leads to its own set of problems. Everyone wants to think about economics as like problems of scarcity, but it's not. Economics is about problems of surplus, right? You produce surplus and then you have a problem of how do you distribute it? You know, how do you allocate it? How do you hoard it? All this kind of stuff. So it's like, you know, sure, ironically, it's like problems of the scarcity of surplus. But the neoclassical economists just forgot about all of that. And we're like, no, it's just supply and demand. And just calculus, and everyone's a rational individual agent with subjective preferences, and forget about reproducing people, and so that's just been like 100 years of nonsense, and the economists they're just wrong about everything. So we have to really reset that, and we have to put it all back on firm footing. That requires a proper network theory, and that's what we're developing with CoFi. So pay attention to that.
So your axioms for CoFi are coming from older economics, not the newer wave, like you said, the neoclassic. So you're kind of taking a macro step back.
I mean, something like that. Like the neoclassical economics is just there's some value there. I mean, I don't want to like completely write off game theory, but you can't use it to understand most of the problems. It's actually, I mean, there's all these conspiracies about why neoclassical economics grew, but it's mostly cover for power games. I mean, what's his name? Rockefeller said that like one of the most profitable things he ever did was his donation to the University of Chicago, right? So I think that basically says it all. But the classical economists were a lot more nuanced and you know, they were practicing more like philosophy and ethics and stuff. Whereas the neoclassical economists, they just wanted to be
You know, they wanted to be considered scientists, like physicists. And so they're like, okay, so to be a scientist, you have to use calculus. And so we better figure out how to use calculus in economics. And then they'll take us seriously as scientists. But, you know, before neoclassical economics, it wasn't economics, it was political economics, right? The classical economists were, they understood that economy was inherently political, and all that kind of got lost in the modern, like, 20th century economics. And so we need to recover the political element. And obviously that's a huge part of what Cosmos is all about, you know, political economy, sovereignty, sovereign interoperability. Like, it's very fundamentally grounded on the notion that, you know, these are political economic systems, not just economic systems, and security is not just an economic phenomenon, it's a political economic phenomenon, and so on. So there's a lot to recover from the classical economists. And there have been, you know, there are some, like, heterodox schools of economics that do draw on the classical economists more. And, you know, some people think, oh, they think classical economists and they just think about Marx and stuff, but, you know, there's a lot more to classical economy than Marx. He was sort of the end, in some sense, of the classical political economy, and he critiqued it, you know, quite substantially too. But he was very much in that tradition. But there's a lot more to it than Marx. I mean, Marx's economics are mostly wrong, and his politics are abhorrent, obviously. But his sociology was pretty good. I mean, he understood some things that a lot of other people missed. And so, you know, there's, anyway, I'm rambling about political economy now. But, you know, I could talk about, maybe I should just start doing Twitter Spaces every week and just talk about this stuff. I don't know if you guys want me to, but it's certainly fun for me. Yeah,
the reason that these systems are emerging, right? And I was going to ask you, probably my last question is, like, that with your current viewpoint, is now the right time to build this with the tech that we have with blockchain?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I think so. So I think now is the right time. The way we've been framing the problem with blockchain is it's too preoccupied with the store value function of money and the settlement function of finance, at the expense of the medium of exchange function of money and the clearing function of finance. And so we're going to use the blockchain technology to refocus. We're going to actually use it as an accounting technology, which is really what it's, you know, everyone talks about, oh, triple entry accounting and, you know, the ledger, the blockchain ledger and all this stuff. And so we're going to use it for that, for basically to restore a new approach to the medium of exchange function of money and the clearing function of finance, which can save us, essentially, or at least that's what we think, is that we can address many of the systemic issues in the monetary and financial system by refocusing on those elements, the medium of exchange and the clearing function, rather than the store value and the settlement function. But the irony is that banking is, you know, also very focused on the store value and settlement functions, and that's part of the problem. So yeah,
thanks, Ethan. Yeah, really good about the weekly economic standpoint of blockchain. That's kind of what gravitated me to get into the industry, was the first principles of it. So yeah, we'll really tune in for that.
Cool. Yeah, maybe I should do that.
All right, thanks, everyone.
Good stuff. You got it. Anything else in anyone's mind? Now's your chance. What's up? Requests. What do we got? Oh, it's gone. Jonathan, what up, buddy? You there?
Yeah. Hey, Ethan. How's it going?
Good. How you doing?
I'm good. You mentioned that we need to, like, represent stocks and flows as a graph. I was just wondering if you thought about, like, the structure that you want to represent at all. Like, graphs are really useful because they're very flexible, but that's also, like, their biggest weakness is you can't infer very much about them. They're very hard to verify. Or, like, it's very hard to verify anything about the internal structure. So I was just wondering if you've thought about anything of, like, an algebra of balance sheets or like some sort of mathematics of stocks and flows. It feels like there's more structure there than just a raw graph.
That's right. Yeah, I think I've uttered the term algebra of balance sheets, but I unfortunately haven't had the time to dive into the research to the level I would like to. But maybe you can do it. And tell me what you find.
Yeah, I'd love to. Honestly,
there's definitely something there.
It feels like a good application of category theory. I hate to talk about category theory because it's like
no, you don't.
You well, love I love to, but I feel guilty about it because it's just so easy to throw at everything. But it feels like something's there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That.
Yeah, I agree.
That was the main question. Thanks.
Cool. Well, you know, if you dive in and find something, definitely let us know. Yeah.
Will do.
Cool. All right. Kicking you out. What else? Any other requests? I can probably go until 3 if people want to hang out for another 40 minutes. I see this says request 1, but then I don't see anyone under here. Yeah. Okay. Well, if no one puts up their hand, then I guess we're going to call it. Yeah. Okay. Good stuff. Oh, someone's asking for recommendations, book recommendations. Are you here, Evan? You must be, because you must have heard me talk about this for the last 20 minutes or so. Oh, Evan's asking. Hi. Yes, you are here. Connecting. What's up?
I had one request for just book requests for anything that happened in the 17th century that you were just talking about.
Yes, yeah, so there is an essential book that you all must read. It is called The End of Finance by Amato and Fantacci. And it covers these concepts of clearing and liquidity, and will hopefully explain to you why your obsessions with liquidity providing are founded, and what we actually need to do is save liquidity. So that's a really excellent book, because it covers the theory, but it also covers the history, and it does the history backwards. So it starts from the 2008 crisis and works its way back through sort of major stepping stones until it works its way backwards to the 16th century, basically. The other book that book is quite accessible. I think if you're still listening to me after talking about, you know, economics for 20 minutes and you want to know where I'm getting this from, read that book. There is a much more difficult book that I'm probably gonna have to read 3 times before I understand it, called Private Money and Public Currencies: The 16th Century Challenge. And this is a unbelievably insightful book about what happened in the 16th century and what the exchange bankers were up to, and how their system collapsed and led directly to the rise of the Bank of Amsterdam first, and then, you know, ultimately the other central banks in the 17th century. So I can tweet those as well, but the one book that you should all read is The End of Finance by Amato and Fantacci, and then the other book that, if you're brave enough, is called The Private Money and Public Currencies: The 16th Century Challenge. There's lots more books that everyone should obviously read, but we'll start with those.
Do you have any like favorite network theory books or anything from? I'm curious if you've probably like gone down the complexity rabbit hole, like all the people from the Santa Fe University.
Yeah, I've been down that rabbit hole. I haven't climbed back out, to be honest. So Jeffrey West's book Scale is a pretty good overview and introduction. I haven't really been in that literature too much recently because I'm really focusing on this sort of history of money and finance stuff these days. So I don't have too much to offer there. One of my favorite books I've ever read is called The Rainbow and the Worm, which is about the biophysics of organisms and how sort of magical it is to be alive. There's a lot that's probably wrong in that book, and people think she's a pseudoscientist, but she's onto something very important, and it had a big influence on my thought as well. So, it's sort of complexity theory. Not so much about networks and things like that, but it's just about the magic of the organism and, non-equilibrium emergent sustainable systems. I use some diagrams from that book in one of my talks, and when I talk about, stakeholders and state machines and stuff like that. So some of those ideas came from her. Mei Wan Ho is her name. Yeah. I don't know if that's helpful.
Yeah, totally. And also happy birthday.
Thank you. Cool.
I have other questions, but I don't want to like hog it up.
Well, if I mean, other people are welcome to request to speak. Nobody has yet. So, it's all you.
Okay. Well, I think this is probably a weird, slightly off-topic question, mm-hmm. but you, in some podcast forever ago, you mentioned something about you were like studying the origins of life.
Uh-huh.
And you were, I think you mentioned something about consensus in the same sentence. So you were saying something about how, like, I don't know if it was like a deep sea thing or what, but how life started. You like had some like consensus of molecules or something. Do you remember anything about that?
Not exactly. I mean, I can pitch you my origin of life story if that's what you want, but
yeah, sure.
I don't remember exactly what the consensus connection was per se. I mean, I talk about Bitcoin as like an origin of life moment in the digital realm. And you know, I was studying the origin of life in university, and when I found Bitcoin, it felt like, you know, the thing I say is that it felt like here was the problem, you know, that I had been studying in the biophysical medium happening in the digital medium. And so I obviously had to pay attention. And there is a sense in which organisms as sort of coherent, organized systems, you know, represent a kind of form of consensus. It's obviously not the kind of like rigorous distributed systems consensus that we talk about in our consensus algorithms, but their coherence represents, you know, something that you could call a kind of consensus. And Meiwan Ho's book, The Rainbow and the Worm, is sort of all about that. It's all about the coherence of the organism and, you know, trying to think about an organism in terms of like its parts and, oh, you know, it's just like a bag of water filled with a bunch of organelles and, you know, stuff like this. Like, it's just completely wrong. The thing is a, you know, there's network activity, there's waveforms, there's electromagnetism throughout the whole thing. I mean, organisms are emitting light in a consistent way that is unique to being alive. So there's a phenomenon called like biophotons. You know, so all material things in the universe are emitting infrared radiation just by virtue of being like physical, material, vibrating things. But life is, living organisms are also emitting ultra weak, so very low intensity, but non-zero radiation in the visible light spectrum. So it's not infrared. And it's, you know, when you look at the infrared, when you look at the frequency of the sort of the sort of infrared emissions, it like drops off in this exponential pattern, whereas the biophoton over frequencies, but the biophotons are being emitted in like a uniform pattern. So it's like a telltale sign of like living organism and is probably what I'm about to get all mystic here. So maybe people are going to stop listening to me once they find out that I'm a mystic, but the biophotons might actually explain like auras and people who think they can see auras around human beings. We are emitting light. It's just so weak that, that you can't really see it, but it does seem to be, you know, there are studies on this, like real studies, but they're only done in like Eastern Europe for some reason. The Americans are like afraid, the Westerners are like afraid to investigate this problem because it's probably not good for big pharma and all this kind of stuff. But anyway, so there's these like strange coherences across the organism, and it seems like actually organisms that are ill emit higher intensity biophotons than those that are not ill. And so the photonic emission seems to be associated with a kind of decoherence. And so to the extent that you're like able to store energy internally and maintain coherence in the organism, you're sort of, you know, reducing the amount of light you're kind of emitting. And so, you know, you're asking about consensus. It's sort of a loose idea. But the organisms are coherent entities. The cell is not just like a blob of water filled with some crap. The cell is more like a liquid crystal than like an aqueous solution. You know, when you learn in like, I don't know, grade school, it's like, oh yeah, cell. It's like you got the cytoplasm. It's just a bunch of water and you've got a bunch of stuff in it and it's moving around. Like, no, the cell is basically a liquid crystal. It's like a structured crystalline form that's incredibly complex. And there's all these like, coherent energies across it. So everything is like coupled in complex emergent ways that we can't even begin to understand. And of course, you know, modern sort of standard biochemistry and stuff wants to understand it as an assemblage of parts and this part does that. And, you know, they sort of mechanically kind of couple and all this kind of stuff. But just like 20th century economics, like that sort of view of the organism is, I think, grossly insufficient to actually understand the complexity of what's going on. And it's part of why I'm so afraid of you know, modern biochemistry and pharma and all these like, you know, arrogant approaches to understanding life that don't actually reckon with the true complexity and coherence of the thing. So, yeah, sorry, I'm going on a rant now. The origin of life story is, I'm going to have to save that for another time, but you can listen to my podcast. I'd probably talk about them. I'd probably talk about it there. But the cool thing is, all right, I'll just tell you here's the cool thing. So the, adenine, which is, you know, one of the base pairs of DNA. And it's the most important one because it's the base pair that's used in ATP. And if you know anything about biology, you know that ATP is like the currency of the cell that's used to power everything, right? So ATP is like the energy carrier molecule. And the A stands for adenine, which is also the A in your DNA, right? So you've got, you know, A, C, G, and T in the DNA. So the A is part of the nuclear code, but it's also the thing that's primarily used for energy that powers all biological organisms. So what is an adenine molecule? If you look at an adenine molecule, it's just five hydrogen cyanides. So if you take five hydrogen cyanides and put them together, you get an adenine. But what's interesting about hydrogen cyanide is that, like, the early Earth was full of this hydrogen cyanide stuff. It was like chock full of it. And so, you know, there's the direct path from, oh, and sorry, I'm getting really excited here because I love the, I'm really glad that we've moved on from like cosmos organizational drama to biophysics, because this is where I want to spend my time. But the important story to understand about the nature of the universe is, you know, people will tell you that, you know, the second law of thermodynamics, the universe is running down, entropy is increasing, it's every man for himself, blah, 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 right? And then they'll invoke God or something like that to explain how organisms show up. You don't need any of that, because it turns out that that the proper way to understand the second law of thermodynamics isn't just that entropy is increasing, it's that gradients are running down. So wherever there is an energy gradient, the structure, the statistical mechanical structure of the universe is such that the gradient will be dissipated, right? And so you on planet Earth, on early planet Earth, you have this gradient between, you know, you have the sun, and then you have this like barren rock or whatever. And so this major gradient of sunlight coming in and bouncing back out. And if the sunlight hits the Earth and bounces back out as sunlight, then no energy was dissipated. And again, the structure of the universe, the zeroth law of thermodynamics, is that, you know, essentially, you know, all states are basically equally likely. And so, you know, configurations which have more possible microstates are gonna be more likely or more favored. People say favored, but it doesn't mean like anthropomorphically favored. It just means like statistically favored. And so there are more ways for the universe to be arranged where the energy in the photon is distributed as heat than there are where it's, you know, packaged up as a photon. And so the universe prefers that the sunlight that's coming into the Earth gets dissipated as heat and doesn't just bounce back out as sunlight, right? And so then you ask, okay, on planet Earth, what are the things that are going to dissipate sunlight? And obviously you have water, and water is a major dissipator of the photonic energy in the sunlight. And so it'll absorb, you know, the photons, and then it'll just like turn the photonic energy, which is this high quality energy, into, you know, the kinetic energy of heat and motion and stuff, right? And so that's what the universe is going to do. But water is only able to dissipate certain frequencies of photonic energy, and there's a gap in what turns out to be the visible light range, and I think the low frequency ultraviolet range. And the one of the things that is sort of best able to dissipate that range of photonic energy is nucleic acids. And so the emergence of adenine from those hydrogen cyanide molecules is highly, highly, highly favored by the structural properties of the universe, simply because it's better able to dissipate the incoming sunlight than the hydrogen cyanide was alone, right? So again, the story is you have an Earth full of hydrogen cyanide, you have sunlight coming in, some of it's going to be dissipated by the water, and you know, the rest of it's just going to bounce back out as light. And if the hydrogen cyanide becomes an adenine molecule, you just take five of them, stick them together, and you get an adenine. That adenine molecule is going to be better able to dissipate that photonic energy, so that even more is going to be generated as heat. And so the universe is going to just naturally prefer the emergence of those sort of adenine molecules. And then you're sort of well on your way to the formation of RNA and, you know, to self-replicating molecules and all that sort of stuff. So there's the thermodynamics actually leads you directly to life. Life is a emergent property of the thermodynamics of the universe. It's not something that's like opposed to the second law. It's a direct living systems on planet Earth are a direct consequence of the second law of thermodynamics properly understood. And that is a profound problem to grapple with. And that is like the source of my philosophy of what I call, you know, sustainability existentialism, that, you know, we need to understand our position in the universe and what it takes to actually be sustainable as a species and so on. And, you know, if you take sustainability existentialism to its natural conclusion, I believe it leads to a political philosophy that I will call monetary localism, which gets us to, you know, cosmos and sovereign interoperability and local money and all this other stuff. So Thank you for tuning in to hear about Cosmos organizations. That was my speech on the origin of life. I hope you enjoyed.
I had myself muted, but I was laughing a few different times. Okay. Yeah, I'm an engineer at Celestia, and originally I went to school for chemistry, and I was always really interested in biology, so I've always had like an affinity for, I guess, your content, because it's always
awesome.
Struck a chord with me.
Well, definitely read The Rainbow and the Worm. Read it skeptically, because she's wrong about a lot of things, because she draws on Prigogine, and Prigogine's one of these like originators of complexity theory, and he was right about some stuff, but he was also wrong about some stuff. And there's a sort of, I don't remember when she wrote that, maybe in the 90s, but there was, there's been a lot of development in non-equilibrium statistical mechanics in the 90s and early 2000s that have really renewed our understanding of the origin of life, and that have heavily informed my, you know, philosophy and everything I'm working toward. So, but The Rainbow of the Worm is very good. And then I could probably recommend some other things, some articles and stuff to follow up. I think there's a scientist who got really popular for espousing all these ideas. I think his name's Jeremy England. You can read about his work if you're into this stuff. Yeah, sure. I think Jeremy England's the guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's him. And I think he has a book. I haven't read it, but yeah. So anyways, this is the stuff I used to work on before I went too far down the crypto rabbit hole. And of course I got into crypto because I was worried that, you know, big tech companies were going to destroy the planet, and I didn't want that. So I thought crypto might be the answer, because we might be able to realize these sort of ideas. But you know, then we have all these crypto companies just doing the same thing as like tech companies and Wall Street. And so everyone's lost their way. So follow me. Yay. Of course, half of you think I've lost my way too, because I'm some, you know, corrupt board member or something. But hopefully, if you've been paying attention, you know there's a lot more to the story. So, anyway, what else is going on? Anything? Should we wrap this up? Thanks, Evan, for diverting me into origin of life topics. And you know, I was expecting questions about the organization and the Cosmos history, but everyone just wants to talk about philosophy. So. That's cool. We got another request here. What's up? A Scabin.
Oh, when are we going to have an informal event in Toronto?
You want an event in Toronto? Are you in Toronto?
Dufferin and Eglinton.
Right on. Okay, let's do it. It's time for an informal event. Yeah, we'll organize something and we'll post about it. Yeah, it's been a long time. I mean, I think we did an event like, before COVID, Jacob even came in from Buffalo. He was in Buffalo at the time, and we were talking about formal verification, and no one really knew what we were talking about. I was supposed to give like a 20-minute talk. I think I gave like a 2-hour talk. It was a little ridiculous, but of course that's what's happening right now again. So, yeah, that's a good idea. I mean, let's definitely do an event here. I'd love to rally more Toronto crew. So, yeah.
You're going to be on the Ethereum Futurist this year. You was last year.
Yeah, last year I rapped hard. I'm not allowed to rap on stage anymore. So I can only rap in caverns by the ocean under moonlight. So I'll probably still go to Futurist, but I probably won't rap on stage.
Thank you very much, sir. Have got
you got it. Thank you. Yeah. All right. We'll remove you. We got another request here. What's up, Black Sheep Papa? How do you pronounce that? Black Sheep Papa. Oh, I get it. Good one.
Hello, sir. First off, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Since you brought up Photon, just curious if I can get your thoughts on the practicality of the dual model token, the proposed model token of Photons moving forward.
Oh, you wanna talk about the token, the Photon token?
Yeah, just. Yes, sir.
But you know, I was talking about the right. Like physics photon,
yes,
right?
Yes. Okay.
But let's make sure we're all clear. Yeah, I mean, I think the universe wants that photon to dissipate too. I don't know. Sorry, gotcha. What are you asking? I mean, there was an idea for like some kind of, you know, we called it a hard spoon, and there was going to be another token, and I don't think it got any traction. So. Are you asking, like, should there be another token on the hub called the Photon that's used as a currency and stuff like that?
Kind of. Just I guess I just want to hear your thoughts on I guess the dual token model of you implementing Photon in the future, or if you know.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't thought too much about it recently. I think there's been a lot of I think there's a lot to suggest that like maybe the dual token thing might not make that much sense unless there's very clear economic reasons for it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think with liquid staking coming, everyone's probably just going to use that. Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I'm mostly focusing on this problem of liquidity saving right now. And so I want to I want people to be able to discharge more debt with less money. And so I'm less interested in like introducing new tokens and stuff like that than I am in reducing debt with the existing tokens that are floating around. So, but you know, there could be still an argument for there to be some kind of, Photon, but it doesn't really seem that compelling to most people anymore. I think in the past it was like, oh, it's going to be a way to align incentives with like the Ethereum community through the airdrop and whatever. But you know, now we have Evmos and we have all these other, all these other projects. So yeah, I don't know if it's that exciting anymore.
Okay. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Cool. Yeah, you got it. We got LX. What's up, LX?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Ethan, happy birthday, first of all.
Thank you.
And second of all, my question is, you know, I actually took some time to research Atom closely today, and I was wondering if you guys are thinking about resubmitting the proposal that failed, the Atom 2.0 proposal, because I do think it's very interesting. And that was my first thought. Like, it's 6 months afterwards, and I'm hearing about all that drama and like Googling and reading.
Yeah.
And I was like, it sounds quite good. And you were tweeting as well that, like, the, you know, there's like some stuff being like discussed now in singular upgrades, perhaps or so. Sorry, I'm not that much into detail yet, but I was wondering, you know, maybe like a little bit less treasury allocation and just resubmitting that thing. Will it work?
Yeah. So first of all, the most important development is that Atom 2.0 is now called Salami. So everyone keep that in mind. And it's just happening anyway. So like all the pieces that were proposed in Atom 2.0 are basically happening and they're basically coming. I think people just didn't like the issuance, I guess. So yeah, we could like get rid of the issuance and resubmit the thing, but I don't think anyone has the energy to deal with that. So we're just going to do it as, you know, the paper exists. You can read the paper. The pieces are coming. People are building them. They'll come out as sort of individual proposals and be voted on. I don't think we, you know, I don't think we really need to vote on like the whole big paper with or without the issuance anymore. It's kind of, you know, it kind of did its duty. A lot of people, I think it was very clear that a lot of people want a lot of the things in there, but, you know, in the form it came, it was no with vetoed and c'est la vie. So, you know, Interchain Securities Live, liquid staking proposal, signaling proposal went up today. All these consumer chains are coming. People are building, you know, people are working on things like the scheduler and the allocator. So it's probably all just going to happen anyway. So, yeah.
That's great to hear because I'm invested in you guys heavily. And obviously, you know, I'm interested in the well-being of the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And my question would then be like, what about the treasury allocation? So if you say like you bring out those upgrades, right? Like for what was the treasury allocation? Then do you guys really need like a lot of money to like fund the development, which obviously is the case. But like, how can you say that you are bringing out those updates now without like, I mean, why was it needed? Is it needed? Why was it proposed? And now you're saying you bring out updates anyways.
Yeah, I think it's definitely needed. I mean, people need to get so you know, arguably the amount that was proposed was a little bit ridiculous. The proposal wasn't just for funding development of the core features, but also for funding sort of long-term, you know, market strategies, like go to markets and making sure that, that like consumer chains are able to succeed and compete effectively and all that sort of stuff. So how everything's going to be funded remains to be seen because, you know, the ICF is going to be cutting budget. Probably further, and the hub community pool is probably going to have to step up to funding a lot more stuff. Right now, the pool's got like what, like 2 million Atom in it or something like that. So, you know, that's a little over 20 mil. So that's a, it's a decent start, but we were proposing like 40 million Atom. But it was going to come in batches, right? It was like 4 million. It was like batches of 4 million. Each batch would have to be approved by governance. So yeah, probably more funding is going to be needed, but, if the hub really wants to be competitive, I think the hub benefits from the bear market by virtue of its just like, conservative nature. It's been drawn down the least of all the other Cosmos chains and stuff like that. So there might be some opportunity for like consolidation. And I think finally with Interchain Security here, we finally shipped it. It opens up like a whole new era for the hub to compete in ways it wasn't possible for it to before, for it to offer like new kinds of services and stuff. So yeah, but it's obvious things are obviously going to need, there's 2.4 million atoms in the community pool. So, so that will need to continue to increase. I think, you know, it's at 10% right now is the tax, I think. So that's good. That'll just, you know, continue to top up. And I think, you know, core hub development is around like 5 million a year or something like that. Actually, what is the ICF? The ICF report said from 2022, Cosmos Hub, where is it? Core work stream, interop, consensus, Cosmos Hub, 7.8. Wow, that's a lot. That's on a bunch of teams, yeah. Okay, so say it's 7.8. It's probably coming down in 2023. Less teams are funded. So the current community pool, yeah. So it's going to need, so maybe the current tax is going to be enough, but the community pool is going to need to be drawn on to fund the hub development. And if, you know, we need maintenance, but then there's also going to need to be, actual core development on other things. But possibly some of that, instead of being funded by the hub, is going to get funded by like, you know, investors in other projects that are going to launch consumer chains and have tokens and other kinds of incentive systems. And, you know, it just might mean that it won't be sort of as incentive aligned with the hub as it might have been if it was directly funded by the hub. But again, the hub has had like massive incentive alignment challenges, not least because AIB collapsed in 2020. And that was, you know, I mean, when your core developer collapses, like it takes years and years and years to recover from that. And we're still recovering. So, so we'll see.
Okay, thanks a lot. If I mind asking one more question.
Sure.
That sounds very reasonable, of course. It's a lot of drama that is going around. I have the feeling. I'm not 100% familiar what like all the stuff with AIB was and why Jaquan left, and then I heard there was like apparently like two big wallets that voted with NWV on that proposal. Uh-huh. And I don't know if that was maybe already talked that, but I like didn't hear anybody like explaining it to me very good, because I'm like checking some tweets there and done some podcasts there. Uh-huh. But like maybe if it's not already like that and you don't, you know, like are too bored about that topic, you might just giving like a little conclusion why AIB collapsed. Why your atoms are locked in AIB. You said that earlier in the interview. That was quite interesting as well. And also like how much organizations are you having for like Cosmos? Because, you know, from Ethereum, I know the Ethereum Foundation that is also coming from Switzerland, and these guys are doing like most of the stuff. And then you have those client teams and so on. But I feel like it's getting a bit messy. Compare it to Ethereum, for example.
Yeah, it's very messy compared to Ethereum. It's very different. Why did AIB collapse? I mean, look, Jay is brilliant. I mean, completely brilliant technical visionary. No one denies that, but is an extremely difficult person to work with. And I don't want to say too much more out of respect for everyone and everything that happened, but it just became untenable for people to keep working there. And so in 2020, they all left and we figured out something else, and we set up new entities to house people. Informal had already spun out was supposed to be doing some other stuff and ended up having to keep pivoting to support the gaps. And, Jay stepped down as CEO of All in Bits later in 2020, and Peng Zhang took over. He was, you know, one of the oldest employees at that company, one of the not oldest in age, but like he had been around the longest. And he built something up for a while, and then apparently Jay came back in like June 2022 and kicked Pung out and fired 100 people, and you know, and then started campaigning against Adam 2.0 and started this ridiculous lawsuit. So I don't know, you know, Jay's maybe going through something too, and I feel for the guy, but you know, it's been very challenging working with him, and I think a lot of people have had that experience, and you know, I was probably the first to have that experience and so left early on. You know, we've been basically cleaning up this mess kind of ever since. So it is very different than Ethereum. You know, Ethereum has the Ethereum Foundation, and they have a lot of core teams are there. Of course, they have all the client teams, but you know, what's also very different about the Ethereum stack is it's a monolith, right? Which I don't mean that as like negatively per se, like, oh, you're a monolith, that's bad, but it makes things way easier for them because the whole system is in one piece of software. Whereas the Cosmos system from the beginning has been many pieces of software. You know, there was Tendermint, and there was the Cosmos SDK, and there was the IBC protocol, and then put it all together into the Cosmos hub. So, you know, you have at least four pieces of software there. And so that's very different. And all of that kind of split apart and had different, different companies looking after it or taking care of it after the AIB fallout. And what's really kind of crazy about it is none of those four products, and of course there's others now, you know, like now there's CosmWasm, and CosmWasm is increasingly adopted and used, but of those initial four kind of core products, Tendermint, SDK, IBC, Cosmos Hub, none of them ever had stable organizational leadership for more than like 18 months at a time in the whole history of Cosmos, which is just like a completely insane fact to wrap your head around. And like the success of Cosmos, despite that, is really a testament to the vision and to the community that formed around that vision to actually like make it all possible and to, you know, to tolerate or persist through all the organizational chaos and development chaos. And so it's been remarkable that we've been able to succeed despite all that. And we've been, you know, trying to rebuild the organizational capacity. And part of why Informo ended up getting so big was because it became the place where, you know, organizational capacity was available to provide stable leadership for teams and for the product development. And so it ended up taking a lead, you know, starting last year on the Tendermint team, and ended up having to rebrand it and on the Hub team. But, you know, so, I mean, you're asking about Jay. I don't know, man, I think he's hurting. I think, you know, like I said, brilliant guy, but really difficult, has been really difficult to work with. I think he's hurt a lot of people. I think he feels bad, but I think he also doesn't know how to engage. You know, I saw him in Denver for the first time in like 4 years, and I care for the guy. I can't help but care for him. You know, we started this thing together, and it's huge now. And you know, we had a big falling out and all that, and so did everyone else. But I still gave him a big hug and tweeted about it. And you know, I got a lot of shit for that. But yeah, so it's rough. So anyway, so AIB got like 10% of the atoms in the Genesis as part of, you know, as for being the core developer, but within a year of the hub launching, you know, everyone left and the atoms stayed. And so, you know, basically most of the atoms that me or any of the other employees from All in Bits were supposed to, you know, get or have exposure to are still at All in Bits. You know, we have equity or options in the company, but most of the atoms are still there. And so, you know, Jay as the CEO can kind of do what he sees fit with them. And unfortunately right now he's using, you know, he's using the money to sue people, or to vote no with veto on our proposals and stuff. So anyway, I try to maintain good relations with him, because I still, like I said, I still care for him as a human being. I think he's hurting, and you know, I want him to understand the impact he's having, and reduce it, and try to come around. But it might not be possible. I don't know. I mean, if he follows through with this lawsuit, I think it's over. Yeah, I don't think there's any coming back from that. I think he still has an opportunity to drop it. Maybe if he drops it and you know, tries to come around and work on himself and stuff, maybe there's a future. But you know, if he follows through on this thing, I think it's just, oh, so sad. But
anyway, I don't want to talk about Jay anymore. We're 2 hours in. I'll talk about other things, but you know, I'm sure you can hear in my voice how sad it is. So yeah. Anyway, thanks for the question.
Ooh, we got a lot of other requests. So I'm gonna move on. ZK Fart, you still have a request here. I'm gonna skip you for now, but I will come back to you just because you already spoke. So let's give the other people a chance. Tweetathon, what up, Fon? You there? Tweetathon, you're live.
Oops, okay, I'm not sure. Sorry about that. Yeah, sorry about that, mate. I'm not sure how I became live. I wasn't sure I had requested the mic. But thank you for hosting the space, and I would just like to listen. It's been very informative.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks for joining. I'm going to ancient Hellas in China, Respector. Can you tell us something about that?
Sure, you know, I've always been a huge fan of the classics. I think when I was younger, I made the decision that if I was going to bother reading something, it ought to be something that's lasted a few thousand years. So I just for decades now, I've just been reading classical philosophy and history texts from the West and from China. So if someone wants something fun to read, go pick up Herodotus or something. I mean, you read a modern history book. Cool. It's all about numbers and a bunch of citations to various academic journals and things like that. But you pick up Herodotus and it's about, you know, a man killing a king and sleeping with the king's wife and running around conquering places. It's more adventurous, fun. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds fun. All right, let's read. Let's do a Herodotus reading club together. Find out what we can learn.
I would absolutely be happy to run one with you, mate. I think anyone who wants to read some history is best start with Herodotus because, you know, we see movies like 300 and whatnot, right? People all know about the Spartans and the Persians and all that. I mean, where are those stories coming from? They're coming from Herodotus. And every second page is a hilarious story. I mean, awesome. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, I haven't picked up Herodotus. I'm trying to break into some Plato.
Okay, well, if you want a little bit of trivia, you know, if you're breaking into Plato, then you know the Ring of Gyges, right, from the Republic. Gyges is also a character in Herodotus. So Plato,
oh, nice.
Yeah, Plato
isn't
changes
like
it a bit.
Like a Lydian king or something, Gyges?
Yeah, so you're right. So in Plato, he changes the story a bit. Plato's younger than Herodotus, so it's a later text. But Plato, the Ring of Gyges, everyone I'm sure read it in university or wherever. There's a meteorite hits the ground or whatever, and they find a ring and it makes him invisible and he can do whatever he wants. So he kills the king and
basically
takes
the throne. Rings.
But you're right. In Lydia, in Herodotus, it's actually Gyges is a guard of the king of Lydia. And the king says to Gyges, look, mate, my wife is incredibly beautiful. You should look at her getting undressed when she changes her clothes. And Gyges says, that's a terrible idea, mate. I don't want to do it. And the king says, well, if you're a loyal guardsman, like if you really love your king, you'll do what he says, right? So come on, come check out my wife. I'll let you sneak into her chambers and you can hide behind the door and watch. And Gyges is like, all right, mate, I guess you're the king. I don't want to get in trouble. I'll do it. And so the king hides Gyges behind the door and the queen comes in. She thinks she's alone. She gets undressed and Gyges, you know, he's been pressured into this. So he watches, but the queen sees him out of the corner of her eye as he goes, oi, come here. And she says, Gyges, you've seen the queen naked. You've got two options here. One, I'm going to have you executed. Or two, I know my husband's a dickhead and he put you up to this. And so you are going to assassinate the king because you've either been perving on the king's wife and therefore must be punished, or you must take the queen as your wife. And so Gyges is now stuck between having forced to do this thing and now he's going to be executed. So he's like, okay, I'll just go kill the king. And so he kills the king and marries the queen, and they live happily ever after until the Persians come and conquer them. That's the original Gyges from Herodotus.
Very cool. So growing up, there was a band in Toronto called Zygo that I just absolutely loved, and they had an album called Turning Gyges Ring, which is phenomenal. So I recommend everyone check out that album. All right. Well, thanks. Thanks for joining. They're all gone now, so I guess that's that.
Okay. Well, any other questions or anything? Cool. It's cool that there's a bunch of you here. Requests. Oh, who's got a request? Oh, Evan. Yeah. What's up, dude? Okay, good.
It, with ICS V3, I believe some mention of having multiple different tokens be able to stake on the same chain.
Mm-hmm.
How do you determine voting weight per token?
Yeah, ICS V3 is currently a big open problem. I think there's a lot of unanswered questions, that being one of them. So I don't think it's going to emerge anytime soon. It seems like people are kind of converging on like mesh security being maybe a better approach to ICS V3. But you know, if Informal keeps getting funding, then we'll keep working on these sorts of research problems. Right now, a lot of our focus is on just, you know, making sure the current version of ICS works well. We'd like to be working on this sort of stuff too. I think probably some version of mesh security. I think we're supporting Osmosis a little bit on the mesh security work. Yeah, I haven't been like in deep in the research problem here. So, but maybe Tebow, I don't know if you're still around, but we'll probably be hosting, more conversations about the R&D work we're doing at Informal. And so, we'll probably do one on our YouTube about, maybe with Jahan or Marius or some of the other guys working on the hub team, about exactly this and they can, you know, they're thinking about this problem all the time. So, they can go into detail and, yeah, or maybe we'll do it as a space so people can ask questions. Yeah.
Cool. I'll look at how mesh security does it.
Yeah, sounds good. Cool. Good stuff. Twitter spaces are fun. I guess I should do this more, huh? Just hang out, talk about whatever I want, kind of, or whatever people want. We do office hours at Informal every week, and especially this, where people just ask whatever the hell they want, and half the time we're like debugging Tendermint or Comet, and the other half of the time we're talking about, you know, the 16th century or something, or, you know, political philosophy. So I guess I could just do that with the public as well, and that's kind of cool. So and if you have continued questions about, you know, or ICF or Cosmos Org, you know, instead of tweeting FUD, you can just like ask me about it. So maybe that's a better way to do things. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, it's 3:00. It's my birthday. So we've been doing this for 2 hours. So I think we'll probably call it here. And I'm going to go for a walk. And yeah, this was great. It was a lot of fun. Thanks everyone for coming and hanging out and asking questions. And we'll do it again sometime. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was Ethan Buckman on AIB, the ICF, and Informal. Recorded on Friday, April 21st, 2023. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening.
When we blow through the dust, volcanoes erupt. No one ever guessed that the game would be tough. Keep it hands off when the play is a bust. Plain old and just, so we keep it on the one. Blast off on the two, help me see the three. Third eye open wide, checking out the scene. Laser beam focus, star scream jokers. Living off the fat of the people they approach. Tell me what happens when the land fights back. With the cliffs at our backs, make the last stand matter. No one ever planned for the famine on deck. We was walking all erect with a dead man swagger. Sitting in a little den, envisioning the middlemen. Listen to the fiddle man play a little ditty, then talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian. Lost in the maze, trying to make the next billion. Talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian. Lost in the maze, trying to make the next billion. In a little den, envisioning the middlemen. Listen to the fiddle man play a little ditty, then talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian. Lost in the maze, trying to make the next No one gave a shit till the drugs all dried up. Everybody died from a bad batch of Lysol, but it didn't matter, we was all high.
hyped up when the pedal lit the metal, he just didn't have the right skill. Watched in the daytime till the night curfew. Rats in a cage till they make time to murk you. Got a little job that falls under my purview. We gotta get this mob away from the bird's view. Gotta find cover, wipe off the bird poop, right off the work while you try on the worst juice. Blinded by perps who try to reverse truth, slide like Fox News just trying to lie to you. Eating up the slop like a bunch of hungry vagrants. I can't wait for the day they lock us up in stasis. Mock up a basement, could call me resilient. Waiting for the internet to make me a billion. Then envision in the middle men, listen to the fiddle man play a little ditty, then talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian, lost in the maze trying to make the next billion. Talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian, lost in the maze trying to make the next billion.
Channel spaces.